You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
We continue to cover Blue Jays spring training here on MLB.com Extras. Tim McMaster along with MLB.com Blue Jays reporter Gregor Chisholm. And Gregor, we'll talk about the World Baseball Classic and some Blue Jays in action, actually going head-to-head in that tournament. But let's start with guys that have been hurt, slowly making their way back, and very important players to this team, and both of them getting into minor league action on Tuesday. That's Devin Travis and Josh Donaldson. Let's start with Donaldson, but the question will kind of be the same for both these guys. He was in a uniform over the weekend. He's back in a game, although be at minor league on Tuesday. Can he be ready for opening day?
Yeah, it certainly looks that way. And one important thing to note here is really that it's the club who's really taking a cautious approach with this. I mean, Donaldson has been saying for a little while now that he feels good enough to play, but considering the time of the year, the Jays want him to pass a series of steps along the way and pass a series of tests before he's actually cleared to return to main action. And they know exactly how much time is remaining to opening day, and everything does appear to be on plan. You know, he received 4 at-bats in that minor league game earlier this week, struck out a couple times. That obviously doesn't really matter at this time of year after sitting out for so long. It's more just kind of about tracking pitches and slowly but surely getting his timing down. And with a couple of weeks to go to get ready and get those at-bats he needs, everything should be fine for opening day.
And then same scenario for Travis, or is it a little different from him since he is coming back from a more serious injury?
Yeah, I think it is a little bit different with him. I think the move to get him into a minor league game is a little bit just more of trying to get him so he can see some at-bats. And when he does, eventually turn that corner in the rehab, he's able to progress a little bit more quickly and not have to worry quite so much about getting that timing down at the plate. So they're going to protect against that knee for the short term. He's not playing the field yet, not running the bases. He's doing a little bit of that kind of in drill work, but has yet to kind of turn that into a game. And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. I think he's got an outside shot to be ready for opening day, but unlike Donaldson, I'd expect Donaldson to be ready. I don't have the same expectations with Travis. I think he's still in potential jeopardy of starting the year on the DL.
Aaron Sanchez finally made his first start of the spring. He was delayed a little bit, or they wanted him to get off to a late start. Once the season's going, once he's taking the ball every fifth day this year, are the gloves off as far as Sanchez goes? Last year they were obviously watching the innings, and then late in the year they skipped him a couple of times. But is it full steam ahead for Sanchez in 2017?
Yeah, it is. And I think this is just one kind of small minor adjustment that the Jays have made, something that a lot of playoff teams do. You know, when they pitch deep into October, a lot of times they'll give a lot of their starting pitchers a little bit of a delayed start to the next spring, just to kind of make sure that they get a little bit more of a proper offseason. And I think especially after everything that Sanchez went through last year with throwing a career high innings, that became even more important from Toronto's perspective to make sure he did get that little bit of extra rest. But once he is dialed up and ready to go for the start of the regular season, I think the reins are going to be off. I think that's the same could be said for everyone in that starting rotation. I think the Jays are going to pick and choose their times to maybe get those guys a little bit of extra rest, whether it's just taking advantage of an off day, maybe an occasional sixth starter, every now and then thrown into a mix a couple times throughout the year. But for the most part, this isn't going to be a situation where you're going to see guys skipped or anything like that. Their starting five is going to be their starting five for as long as they're healthy.
Hopefully Blue Jays fans have been paying attention to the World Baseball Classic, because if they've certainly seen some thrills from their players. Jose Bautista was able to keep the Dominican Republic undefeated with an unbelievable throw from left field to gun down what would have been the winning run from Colombia at the plate. The Dominican Republic has now lost the game, but they're still alive. They lost Tuesday night to Puerto Rico. And then Marcus Stroman got to pitch against the Dominican Republic. He struck out Jose Bautista and got kind of a kick out of that, and he was great. The U.S. ended up losing that game after Stroman left. But between that and then obviously the Canadian team was in the tournament, has now been eliminated, there's been a lot to enjoy for Blue Jays fans.
Yeah, there really has, and then particularly that Stroman-Bautista moment was one that got a lot of attention up here, and rightfully so. I mean, it was a really kind of fun tournament. There was one GIF going around that kind of zoomed in on Batista's facial expression when he stepped into the box, and he kind of gave a little wink to Stroman. Those guys are clearly having fun with it, and in a tournament that I think a lot of people are having fun with. I mean, it's been pretty incredible. It was obviously very disappointing for Team Canada. Batista kind of got the last laugh in that one as well, homering off them. kind of playing the villain role that maybe some Blue Jays fans were expecting him to play this year before he re-signed. But it's kind of interesting to see that side of things as well. But you know, there's been a lot of encouraging signs from the Blue Jays side, and kind of after a slow start to the spring training with some disappointing news with Donaldson and Travis, you know, the way that Batista, Stroman, and the way the guys are performing in Blue Jays camp itself is certainly encouraging.
Kendrys Morales is another guy who just continues to hit. I think we've talked about him the last 3 weeks on this podcast because he just continues to get into spring training games and swing the bat great. You almost want to tell him to save some hits for the regular season. Where is he now? Is he must be pretty much ready to go. He seems like a guy who doesn't need a lot of swings to get ready.
Yeah, no, he's locked in, and I think you're just going to, more than anything else, the Jays are just going to try and maintain that. So as you said, he doesn't burn out or anything in spring training, use up all those hits. He's certainly going to want to save some for the regular season. But, you know, that's another very encouraging storyline for the Jays. And Toronto really has a few of them this spring in terms of guys that they're going to have to rely on who are having good spring trainings. And that doesn't necessarily guarantee success in the regular season. We all know that. Results can often be misleading. But when you look at the numbers that Kendrys Morales is putting up, you have to be encouraged. When you look at the spring that Kevin Pillar is having at the plate, Blue Jays fans have to be encouraged by that, and you know, the hope remains that they'll carry some of that into the regular season.
Scary moment for the Blue Jays. TJ House hit in the head by a line drive last week. The great news is that he's okay. Is there a timetable for him though, as far as throwing again and getting back to baseball?
Yeah, that's one that's going to take a little bit of time, and you know, I kind of know that from having followed Jay Happ when it happened to him back in 2013. And you know, the first couple of weeks, there is a lot of uncertainty, and then you kind of just see how those guys, you know, recover after that. But, you know, he is going to make a full recovery. I don't think there's any long-term concerns for him. So it should prove to be a relatively short-term thing in the grand scheme of things. And that's certainly encouraging for him because that was a really scary incident. And we've now seen a number of those in baseball over the last few years. And every time it happens, you know, everybody's heart just drops and the game itself becomes secondary. I mean, that spring training game was rightfully called in the ninth inning. They didn't even play the rest of that game because of what happened there. You know, the Jays have someone in there who's gone through it before in Jay Happ, and certainly TJ House will have people, you know, someone like Happ to lean on, you know, as he kind of builds his way back and gets his confidence back and gets rid of, you know, any concussion-like symptoms he was dealing with and kind of getting his right mentality back in the mound.
Yeah, and the good news was there was no fractures or anything like that. You almost assume there's a concussion at that point, but I guess there's no factual, they don't know for sure if there was a concussion. So it's more going to be, I guess, getting back mentally and stepping back on that mound, facing a hitter, knowing that there's always the chance that line drive can come back at you. All right, well, that was a downer. So we'll end on a fun note, and that is, there's a story on BlueJays.com right now, Joe Biagini. He's been a spot starter a little bit this spring, and he's been effective in that. But I think the thing that stood out to me from the article is this guy's kind of a stand-up comic.
Oh, yeah. He's a quirky guy. You have to go, whenever you talk to Biagini, you kind of have to go in to be prepared for anything because the conversation can go in any kind of directions. He prides himself on having a number of one-liners. He's a very, very quirky guy, and you know, he got a lot of attention last year in Toronto for some of the quirky interviews and some of the jokes that he's had along the way, and got a little bit of attention south of the border over the off season as well when he was on Jimmy Fallon. I got an appearance on there as well. So he certainly is an interesting case. He's a very unique individual compared to, it's not someone you come across very often in baseball. He always keeps things very, very loose. And certainly prides himself on that stand-up comedy aspect. His jokes don't always hit the mark, but he certainly gives the effort.
How much does that just help out in a bullpen situation where you have a guy like that can be that funny when, you know, all those guys are out there game after game, usually for the first 4 or 5 innings, not even really considering pitching until the later innings, to have a guy like that to keep things light?
Yeah, I think there's always kind of a need for someone like that in the clubhouse. And they're very, very different, and I hesitate to compare the two, but in a way, like Munenori Kawasaki, when he was with the Blue Jays before, kind of had that secondary role. Obviously, it doesn't really impact what happens on the field, but his secondary role he had was everybody in the clubhouse loved the guy. He was great at keeping things loose and in moments of tension, kind of help break that ice. And to a certain extent, Biagini has a little bit of that as well, because he certainly is either the butt of jokes or making jokes throughout the time in the clubhouse as well. And so he certainly brings that kind of light element. And I think it's important. It's obviously not, necessary to have. But I think it is important just to, for the overall morale and things that are going on inside that clubhouse as well, just to be able to keep things loose.
Great stuff, Gregor. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Blue Jays edition. For Gregor Chisholm, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone. Tim McMaster here along with our MLB.com Orioles reporter, Brittany Giroli. Spring training rolling along for the Orioles, who are getting healthy, and we'll talk about that a little bit. They also made a roster move this week, so we'll start there. Brittany, Pedro Alvarez is back. Made his debut for the Orioles. I guess the question is, why did it take so long for them to reach an agreement, and where does he fit into this roster?
Yeah, well, he's someone like Michael Bourne that they had on their radar that they wanted to bring back to him. But the question was, are these guys going to accept minor league deals? And with Bourne, it took a little while. With Pedro Alvarez, obviously still out there, it also took a little while. But you look at how weird the whole free agent market transpired this winter. And I think guys were just holding out and hoped that they were going to get these good deals. And now you're at the point where you need to sign. So that's what happened with Alvarez. He didn't have a market, and the Orioles were able to capitalize on that. So as far as where he fits in, that's where it gets a little interesting, because he's obviously a guy who thought to be more of a one-dimensional player, more of a designated hitter than anything else. So he's probably would slot in there. I know that they did say that he would play some outfield. That wasn't something that we saw at all last year. So it will be interesting to see how he fits in. Now, one thing is for sure is he's a good bat, and he had some really good at-bats for them last year. So in that respect, he's a good guy, I guess, to have back. But I'll be honest with you, it's a little confounding. I think if he makes the team, it really limits what you can do with that bench.
Yeah, and you have so many guys now that are maybe defensively challenged that can swing the bat. How does his presence affect Trey Mancini? We talked about Mancini on the podcast last week, and I know he's been trying to learn the outfield a little bit in the last week because there's obviously no spot at first base for him. So now you throw Alvarez into the mix. Does that have a big effect on Mancini?
Yeah, he's the guy who you wonder, like, could he not make the team? Because he doesn't have the experience Pedro Alvarez has at the major league level. He doesn't have that level of sustained success. And certainly they could keep him at AAA, see how he does. It wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. Trey Mancini, defensively, they're trying to figure out what to do with him as well. So I guess in that regard, it's maybe a little bit of an upgrade. But I do think if Trey Mancini goes to AAA and continues to hit well, what are you going to do? Are you going to designate Pedro Alvarez at that point? It just kind of creates an interesting logjam, which I'm sure they'd be happy to have that problem, too many guys swinging the bat well. But it is interesting. And then you got to watch some of these minor injuries in spring training, like Seth Smith and his hamstring. And then you wonder what happens with this outfield mix. Does Joey Rickard make this team? Because you really need some insurance outfield-wise. So a lot more at play, I think, roster-wise this past week than you would have thought.
As for Mancini in the outfield, from what I read, the experiment didn't get off to a great start. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, defensively, he's kind of been a guy they've tried to find a spot for. The one thing he does well is he mashes left-handed pitching. You saw that last year, albeit in a small sample size, but you saw it with the Orioles. So, no, it hasn't gone all that well. It is really tough in spring training to judge guys. Spring is the great fooler, as Buck likes to say. And especially the fly balls with the wind, you see really good outfielders that just look like they don't know what they're doing simply because there's no third deck. So the wind takes a lot more, kind of changes the trajectory of the ball a lot more than it does during the season in these major league stadiums that have those upper decks. But certainly I think they would have hoped it would have gone a little bit better early on with Mancini. He's worked a lot with outfield coach Wayne Kirby. He's a guy that wants to learn, and he's a guy that wants to get better. But there's still a lot of improvement there if he's going to be a capable major league outfielder.
All right, let's move on to the injuries and the guys coming back, I guess, and all of that. We'll start with Chris Tillman because that's where we always start this discussion. Received a cortisone shot on Wednesday. What does that mean as far as time zone and what are they a time frame and what do they hope that cortisone shot allows him to do?
Well, they're saying it doesn't change too much. They already ruled out opening day. They've not really said it, but it seems more unlikely that he's going to be in that starting five. So because of all the early off days, it's still not entirely out of the realm of possibility that Chris Tillman isn't one of their first five starters to open the season. So with this cortisone shot, obviously something you can do, I think, two or three times a year for a guy. They're hoping to get some of that inflammation out of there, some of that pain. You know, he was progressing better, and then it was getting worse again. And they had to, you know, push back that bullpen, and then it didn't happen. So I think with Tillman, they're just hoping that they can totally get rid of that pain and get him going back again. And they've had the benefit of having a longer spring training, you know, with the WBC going on. So it doesn't change his timeline too much, but it's just another unfortunate setback because he was on track. It looked like, okay, he won't make opening day, but he's not going to be long after. Now you're wondering, if he's not there in that starting five, who makes the team? Is it Tyler Wilson? Is it Mike Wright? Or do they go out and get a starter? Because injuries like this, Tim, kind of show you how scary their depth is. They were relying on Chris Tillman. If they have one or two guys go down, they're really in a big trouble here because they didn't get a starter this winter. They thought that they had the depth. They thought that they liked the improvement by their guys. But I think in Major League Baseball, you always want extra guys. And beyond that starting five, there's a big drop-off. So they really need to hope that this cortisone shot does its job and Chris Tillman gets back on track and gets into another throwing program very soon.
And there were some players still available late in the offseason. The Orioles didn't pull the trigger on any of them, and maybe now they pay the price. Now, J.J. Hardy is back in action after the back spasm. Zach Britton threw for the first time this spring. It didn't go well, but first time out, that's to be expected, I guess, especially when you're behind the hitters. But what was his feelings after throwing an inning? He allowed four hits, a couple of runs. He did strike out a couple batters.
Yeah, you know, he said he felt okay, which I guess physically is the most important thing. Spring training, as you're right, people don't get too upset about their results, but Zach Britton gets upset about results. He wanted to do better. He's not a guy who's used to giving up runs. So that's something they're going to monitor. I think the first time or two out, they're kind of going to give him a pass. If we're getting late in the spring and he's still giving up runs every outing, then you start to wonder, is he really right? What's going on? But for now, the fact that he went out there, he was healthy, he said he wasn't thinking about the oblique, those are all positives. And the same thing with J.J. Hardy. The fact that these guys are getting out there and we're in mid-March, you feel okay about both of these guys being ready to start the season. So I think with those two injuries, it looks pretty promising, especially a guy like Britton. You want to catch something like an oblique early because those have a tendency during the season to sideline guys for a long time and for guys to come back too early and to never be right.
One more on the pitching side of things. Dylan Bundy struggled on Sunday. He had looked pretty good, but two innings, five hits, five runs. What kind of went wrong? What was his thoughts on what wasn't working in that game on Sunday?
Yeah, he really struggled, and really nothing was working. I think when you get behind guys and you struggle to really command that fastball, and so many guys in the major leagues live off of that fastball. And for a guy like Dylan Bundy, he had been pitching so well that you kind of take that one and throw it away. But the Orioles have had a little string here of not great starts. I mean, Wade Miley was upset with his performance. Against Tampa Bay, I believe. So it's kind of that point in spring where, you know, guys maybe get roughed up a little bit. They're trying to push it. Hitters are starting to get into their groove again. So it's a kind of a combination of things. For Dylan Bundy, I think when you look at his previous outings, when you look at how good he looked even from early on bullpens, you don't get too concerned. These, as they start going deeper now, they finally had Yubaldo Jimenez with four innings. As they start getting into more real starts, you're going to start to see them approach it a little bit more like a regular game. And then I think you start to worry when these guys start going five innings, five-plus innings, and they're getting hit around. So with Dylan, I think you just take that and you just throw it out the window. I think with this rotation right now, you're just hoping that those other four guys are healthy because of what the Chris Tillman injury has done. You know you're already down a guy, and you're not sure when you're going to get him back.
The World Baseball Classic continues, and Baltimore Orioles players have had some really great moments in it. Probably a lot of fun for Orioles fans to be checking out. Manny Machado, obviously part of a great team that's playing well with the Dominican Republic. Jonathan Scope, the Netherlands, is moved on. Looks like they're headed to the Final Four. And Adam Jones has been kind of a hero for Team USA that's moved on to the second round so far. I mean, you want to see your guys playing well. You want to see them in that moment. And Baltimore Orioles have been some of the biggest moments of the entire tournament.
Some of these games, Tim, they're so cool. And I was watching on MLB TV the Dominican Republic Colombia game when Bautista made that play and they ended up going to extra innings and the Dominican won. And it's just really, it's really cool to see. I mean, I've never attended a World Baseball Classic game, but the more I watch them on MLB TV, the more I want to. You know, the atmosphere is just so cool. You get so used to the great early games, which, you know, the tensions aren't high. The guys aren't, nearly as excited. You know, it's kind of going through the motions a lot. But with these games, I mean, there just has to be a way, or I would like to see this tournament more often. It's really cool to see. I know Buck wants his players to hurry up and lose so that they can come back, you know, very selfishly so. But watching these guys, watching Scope take part in that pie that they gave to Profar a few games ago, and watching Adam Jones get that big hit, I mean, it's just been really cool to see. You understand now why these guys want to go, why it's such an honor when you watch these games. They take it very seriously. These guys want to win. They want to represent their country. It's sort of bigger than them. And again, when you compare it to the spring training games, I think it's not even close in terms of level of excitement, level of play. I saw Israel lost today, which is too bad because they had a hell of a run too. It's just a really cool tournament. This is the first year I've been able to watch it a little bit more. And the more I watch it, the more I think I need to get to a WBC game at some point in time. It's really neat.
I think this has been the best one they've had so far. And one thing that always stands out to me with the World Baseball Classic is the emotion you see from the players, because there's something about Major League Baseball and the unwritten rules and the history of the game and the way it all goes back that guys always kind of keep everything under the lid, so to speak, even after big plays, but they let it go in the World Baseball Classic. The Puerto Rico-Dominican game the other night, guys are jumping up and down in the middle of the game. Yadier Molina's walking off the field after an out at the plate and screaming and hollering, and you just don't see that in Major League Baseball just because that's the way baseball has kind of been built up in this country, but it's different in these other Latin American countries.
It is. It's almost like the postseason vibe that you get. It's that important. It's that remarkable. It's really, really cool to see.
So if you're out there and you haven't checked out any of the action, make sure you do, because there's still plenty of, much to Buck Showalter's chagrin, there's still plenty of Baltimore Orioles players playing in the tournament, and there's a pretty good chance they'll continue to play for the next week or so and maybe get to that championship game. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Orioles edition. For Brittany Giroli, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Yankee spring training rolling along down in Florida in Tampa. Tim McMaster here along with Brian Hoke, our MLB.com Yankees reporter. And Brian, we're going to get through some of the guys who are pitching really well. A lot of the starters are pitching exceptionally well recently for the Yankees. But we got to start with the newest Yankee, because the team has announced that they've signed Ernesto Friere to a minor league deal. It comes with a big league invite. And here is a perfect example of guys taking advantage of the World Baseball Classic. Friere hasn't pitched in the big league since 2015, but he pitched for Colombia in the WBC. He pitched well. Scouts took notice, and now he's at Yankees camp.
Yeah, I think it's a great opportunity, and that's exactly the kind of guy who needed a chance like that to be on a stage. And he had one outing against the Dominican Republic, which obviously was a stacked lineup, and he pitched pretty well, got a double play on Robinson Cano. So, you know, I think the Yankees probably saw that and said, hey, if he can do that against Robbie Cano, well, maybe he can do it for us. So I think that Joe Girardi says he's going to have a legit chance to make the team. He's obviously coming in a little bit later than everybody else, but he's been pitching competitively, so it's not like he has to start from scratch here. So I think the Yankees will give him a legit chance to see what he has the last couple weeks of camp.
I mean, this is a guy who, at a time, was a proven closer in Major League Baseball. Obviously, that was a number of years ago, but it's a guy that's been in that pressure of a ninth-inning situation, and you know he can do that. So you would think that translates, obviously, to earlier in the game, and you would think he's a guy that can handle pitching in New York, probably.
You would think so, and the thing is, you're not going to look at Friere to come in and be the closer. They just spent $50-plus million to get a closer. He's not going to be the eighth-inning guy. Dylan Betances has got that on lock. He may not even be the seventh-inning guy because Tyler Clippard is here. I think that a guy who's proven he can do it on that stage, if he's your fifth, sixth-inning guy, you're in pretty good shape. So I think he's got a chance to make this team. I think that they've got a lot of other young arms that they want to take a look at. But, you know, volume and numbers, it never hurts to have more choices to take a look at.
All right, let's move on to some of the other starting pitchers in this team that have really looked good lately. We got to start with Michael Pineda. Five perfect innings on Wednesday night, five strikeouts along the way. I guess they expected him to throw four innings, but he was so economical getting through the four that he went out again. And, I mean, this is good Michael Pineda. We see good Mike Pineda and bad Michael Pineda. This is the good part, and it's nice to see it in mid-March.
It was even better than that. He struck out five straight, but he had eight in total. So you've seen this before. When Pineda's really on, he's on. And you know, I keep thinking back to the Mother's Day game 2 years ago where he struck out more than a dozen. I don't remember the number off the top of my head. I think it was 16. He had a couple last year with double digits. I mean, he's got that kind of stuff. And I remember talking to Austin Romine about it earlier this spring, and he says, yeah, he's that good. It's fun to catch a guy like that because you never know. This could be the game where he's going to strike out 15. And so I think that Pineda, obviously, we keep talking about his stuff. Everybody knows about it by now. It's all just getting it together. And if he can be that guy 5 out of 6 times, 8 out of 10 times, that's going to be huge. Then you're talking legit Cy Young contender the way that CeCe Sabathia talked about. The problem, obviously, has been he hasn't been able to do that. And it's something they've worked on with him, focusing, trying to finish innings. They talk about that a lot. They've been trying to drill that into his head. You have to finish the inning. Two strikes, two outs, finish, finish, finish. And I think the message is getting through. So you go off what you've seen so far in spring training. He looks really good. I feel like we've talked about that before, though. So I am curious to see how it plays out in the regular season.
Yeah, you wonder what the next start is like. That's always the question with Pineda when he looks this good, is will he look this good next time and the time after that? So five perfect from Pineda, four perfect from Tanaka on Saturday. He had seven strikeouts in that effort. I mean, these guys seem like they're in a good place at this point in the spring when you still have a couple more weeks to get those innings up, the pitch limits up. But at this point, to have this kind of sharp stuff is a good sign.
Best possible case for the Yankees, absolutely, because for this team to get where they want to go, which is to be a playoff contending team, they're going to need Masahiro Tanaka to be what he was last year, and they need Michael Pineda to be what they think he can be. And so if those two things happen and you get contributions from CeCe Sabathia and whoever winds up getting the last two spots in the rotation, they'll be in good shape. But they absolutely need that to continue. They need Tanaka to be that guy, and they need Pineda to step up and take that next step forward.
Obviously, one of the guys battling it out for one of those last two spots is Luis Severino. He pitched on Tuesday, gave up a home run to Ricky Weeks Jr., but overall, not a lot of mistakes in that one. He struck out the side in the third inning. And Yankees.com, there's a story right now, Brian, about the fact that he's trying to slow things down, which I think is something a lot of young pitchers have to figure out.
For sure. And I think that for a guy like Severino, who came up at the end of 2015 and pitched with such success, you know, maybe the game seemed a little easy then. He was basically handed a rotation spot coming into camp last year. He would have had to really collapse in spring training not to open the year in the rotation. But his collapse came in the regular season when he was 0-8 as a starter. It did not work last year, and the Yankees are still trying to figure out, who is Luis Severino? Is he the guy that you saw at the end of 2015 who helped them fight for a playoff spot? Is he the guy who really struggled in the rotation last year but then was dominant out of the bullpen? And Brian Cashman, I asked him that question earlier this spring, and he said they don't know. They really don't know. They want him to be a starter, and I think he's going to get every chance to win that rotation spot. I think he's pitched well enough to take it at this point. But they don't know if he's going to be a starter or a reliever long-term. He would prefer to be a starter. I think you hear that a lot. There's not many guys that you talk to in spring training and say, yeah, I would actually prefer to be in the bullpen. Everybody wants to start. It's fun to be out there. It's fun to start. They think he can, but they're not sure he can. So this is his chance. And let's not forget, he is just 23 years old. He would be far from the first guy to ever struggle in a big leagues, figure something out, and come back and do really well.
In fact, I think that happens more often than it doesn't happen, that guys have to face that struggle first before it comes together. Austin Romine hurt his thumb this week. I guess the x-rays are negative. Is he going to miss a few days, though?
A couple days, but they believe he should be back in when the Yankees go across the state. They're going to go check out that new ballpark on the other side and and see how that looks in West Palm. So they think Romine's going to make that trip. If he doesn't, it's not really going to make too much of a difference because Girardi said that Romine had a leg up on the competition anyway. I know we talked about there were competitions in right field and first base and also for backup catcher, but I think that if Romine can stay healthy, and he's fortunate that the x-rays came back clean, he's going to be the backup catcher, and Kyle Higashioka will begin the year at AAA, and that's pretty much locked in at this point. So barring any unforeseen injury or anything like that, I think Romine will be coming north with the Yankees.
I'm not sure a bus ride across the state of Florida is the motivation you're looking for to get a guy back in the lineup.
You're right. Maybe he'll say, hey, I better get treatment here. You know, the ice is just as cold in Tampa as it is in West Palm. Maybe I can just hang out in the trainer's office. But I think that if there's one thing you can take from Austin Romine, he does love to play. He comes from a baseball family. His father, Kevin, played for the Red Sox, obviously, for years. His brother plays in a big league. So this is a guy who likes to be on the field. And so I don't think that that's going to be the case. I would bet that he's going to be on that bus.
Brian, the Baby Bombers continue to produce this spring. Bird has cooled down from a power standpoint after he got really hot early on. But Aaron Judge coming on again on homer the other day. These guys, look, it's still spring, obviously, but this is a team that's counting on these guys to maybe not look like rookies this season. And this spring, they don't really look like rookies.
Well, and that's the thing. You talk to people around the league, and they say there's a lot of poise on this team. Greg Bird has earned comparisons to John Olerud. Gary Sanchez, obviously, you know what he did last year. Aaron Judge, even though he came up to the big leagues and struggled last year, he carried himself like a big leaguer, and you see that a lot on this team. Gleyber Torres was compared to Miguel Cabrera by Joe Girardi this week. I think that you're throwing out a lot of big names here, but you also see reasons for it. It's not coming out of nowhere. So you do see a lot of potential here. There's going to be growing pains. I am sure of it. At some point this year, there's going to be an 0 for 12 or an 0 for 15 or something like that from any one of these guys. But you really see the adjustments being made. You see the presence of mind that they're here to work. They're not here to party and run around the field and have fun. I think what the Yankees have here is a really good group that it's easy to look a couple years down the road and say that is going to be the heart and soul of a competitive team. And so I mean, it may happen this year as well, but I think that it's very easy to look for 2018 and 2019 and say you can count on that guy. You can count on this guy. You can count on that guy. So there's good things happening all around this camp, and obviously they've been winning games in the spring too, which doesn't hurt.
The big non-story of the week, Clint Frazier getting a haircut, so we might as well touch on that a little bit because it brings up the conversation that comes up, I don't want to say every year, but every once in a while somebody comes out and says, maybe this shouldn't be a rule for the Yankees. But I feel like because it was George Steinbrenner's rule, and obviously George Steinbrenner no longer with us, but the family still in charge of the Yankees, it's never going to go away because of that, because this is a guy that was held in such regard and ran this team, and now he's gone. It's almost like a memorial rule that Yankees players will not have long hair.
Well, Reggie Jackson put it the best. He said that, you know, there are people in the organization here who are in their 70s, who were here when George bought the team in 1973, and the way that they think the team should be run is the way that George would have wanted it. So I think he actually said, the way the sheriff wanted it is how we want it. And so I think that as long as the Steinbrenner family owns this team, and there's no indication that that's going to change at any time in the future, you know, Jennifer Steinbrenner recently said that this team is going to be owned by the family for generations. So I think the New York Yankees, George Steinbrenner, those are synonymous. And the next thing that comes along with that is George Steinbrenner's facial hair policy and grooming policy. And the thing with Frazier is he wasn't clearly in violation of it. The hair didn't touch his uniform. He actually had a Yankee okay haircut, but it just came down to be that Girardi and Frazier decided together that it was becoming a distraction. You know, it was creating media hype. You know, it seemed like all people wanted to talk about when you talk about Clint Frazier was Clint Frazier's hair. And don't get me wrong. I mean, it looked good, but I think he would like people to talk more about his play on the field. And he hit a home run here today in Dunedin, so clearly it wasn't a Samson-type thing. He can still hit with or without hair. And I heard him say that he's getting a lot of positive reviews about the new haircut. So maybe it'll turn out to be a good thing for the Yankees.
Well, that's good. Good that he's getting the positive reviews. I'm sure Yankees fans are thrilled just to see him up with the big league club at some point this season and hopefully hitting home runs and roaming the outfield. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Yankees edition. For Brian Hoke, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next week. We continue to track Rays spring training here on MLB.com Extras. Bill Chastain, our MLB.com Rays reporter, joining me, Tim McMaster, here on the podcast. And Bill, let's start with this team and guys that are kind of moving around a little bit. And I guess Tim Beckham is getting a little more time at shortstop because Matt Duffy continues to be out. They wanted to work out Beckham in the outfield a little more. This is taking away from that. But just in general, Beckham's ability to move around the diamond has to be a plus right now.
Yeah, it's a plus, but they're, you know, he looks like he's going to start the season at shortstop pretty much because, like you said, Duffy is a little bit slower than what they expected. But the fact that he is going to be used mostly in utility after that, they're going to make sure he still gets some of his outfield reps because that's really a new position for him. And, of course, he's played a lot of shortstop in the past. So we'll be seeing him in the outfield a lot between now and the end of spring training.
As far as Duffy goes, what is the timetable for him right now?
You know, he thinks he could almost be ready by opening day, but the main thing is they don't want to rush it, you know, or impose some kind of deadline that's like, you know, where they end up trying to meet the deadline and he ends up having to go back on the DL. He's making, you know, nice progress, but it's just a little bit slower than, you know, what they had thought at first.
One of the things we've talked about a little bit is the fact that this team, when you look at this roster, Bill, there's just more depth than there was a year ago around the diamond. One of those guys you see in the outfield who, you know, has shown flashes this spring, Malik Smith, a great catch on Monday. He robbed Joe Mauer of a home run. Has he impressed enough this spring to push at all for a bench job on the opening day roster?
Yeah, in fact, the way the outfield shakes down right now, he can almost start on opening day because doesn't look like Colby Rasmus will be there. You know, looks like he'll probably start the season on the DL, which leaves Corey Dickerson or Malik Smith to be your left fielder. And, you know, chances are Dickerson will probably be your DH. So, yes, I definitely think Malik Smith will be there at opening day.
Now, we know he can run and we know he can play some defense. What has he shown you with the bat this spring?
Well, the main, you know, one of the things I really like about him is he's so old school on this bunt. I mean, he laid a bunt. I've seen him bunt, you know, several times, and he just knows what he's doing, and he puts a lot of work into it. It's really a craft with him, and any time a fast guy like that can bunt, it just adds points to his batting average and makes him, you know, all the more dangerous.
Kind of a forgotten art in baseball that's maybe coming a little bit more back as you see guys that kind of embrace the speed a little bit. I mentioned the depth, and have you seen that throughout the spring, just that when more of these guys are getting in the games, there's just more to fill in than there was a year ago, and maybe this team is a little more equipped to deal with injuries throughout the season?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, just like you look at even catcher. I mean, they don't have Johnny Bench at catcher, but they've got three solid catchers here this spring, and they're going to have to make a decision between Casale, Maley, and Jesus Sucre. You know, and one of those guys will go down. But, you know, so you got three solid catchers there, and then you got Wilson Ramos coming back, you know, later in the summer. So I think that's a good, you know, microcosm of kind of what the depth is on the team. I think you see that pretty much across the board.
Yeah, we've seen it because of injuries this spring. Obviously, Ramos not ready to go yet. It's going to be a little while for him. And Logan Morrison hadn't been able to play in the field until Sunday. He had just been DHing. He's a guy that's pretty comfortable around the bag, though. Is he confident in getting out there and being fully healthy and being ready to go for the season at first base?
He thinks so. I mean, his wrist might nag him a little bit. In fact, funny thing is, you normally think of a wrist, it would hurt you more hitting. But for him, it's kind of nagged him a little bit more throwing. Still, he's gotten back out there, though, and I think he's pretty confident he's going to be ready.
You have a story on the website right now, Bill, on Taylor Guerrieri, a guy that there was a time when he was kind of on the fast track, I guess, but Tommy John surgery back in 2013. And now he's coming back and looking pretty good. And just another example of what the Rays are able to do with young pitching. They just have these guys, it seems like, lined up. But what is his position right now within this organization?
Well, I mean, he's you know, pretty far back there, actually. Yeah. But I like to call it the long blue line because they've got so many of these guys, you know, bottled up. You know, you saw them all spring. I mean, there's really good guys. I mean, I've been impressed by Hunter Wood, Austin Pruitt. You've got Jacob Faria. All of these guys, and of course, Jamie Schultz, he looks like he might come in and grab a bullpen spot. So there's a lot of guys backed up, and not to mention, you know, you've got guys like Chase Whitley and Erasmo Ramirez and Andrees. So there's a lot of starters there that, you know, we could see at some point during the season.
And certainly the reason that the team was able to part ways with so many starters throughout the last basically 6 months or so from the trade deadline through the offseason. As far as the guys that will be in that rotation, Chris Archer, boy, Bill, pitching in the World Baseball Classic, 4 perfect innings against Venezuela. And you look at that Venezuela lineup, it's basically an all-star team. Did you get to see that game? And it was an electric atmosphere. All those games have been in that group for the World Baseball Classic, and Archer really seemed to embrace it and pitch great.
Yeah, Archer seems to kind of have an ability to get amped up, and he really looked amped up for that, which I thought was cool. I think pitching for his country meant a lot for him, and he certainly, you know, put his best foot forward there because that's about as good as you're going to see with Chris Archer.
And the interesting thing is, I guess there's a chance he could pitch again for Team USA towards the end of the tournament. But in the meantime, he's back with the Rays, which is one of the – it can happen for some of these teams because they were there in Florida playing, so it's easy enough for him to get back to spring training. But it's a weird aspect of the World Baseball Classic as well when players sometimes leaving the team to get back to their regular teams. But the Rays must be happy to have him back in camp for a bit.
Yeah, and I think that the World Baseball Classic, I think it's a little, you know, the more it happens, the more sensible they get to these things. You know, I've been impressed by how they, you know, have said if so-and-so is, you know, it lands on his pitching day, he can, you know, he'll join the team. If not, you know, we're not going to upset the apple cart by having him pitch on different days than what he normally was scheduled to do. So it does look like they've kind of had a nice learning curve on that.
Which works out for the U.S. team because they have so many arms to rely on as well. And one of those guys could be Odorizzi, who has a chance. Has he talked at all about that and the waiting game? And I'm sure he'll talk to Archer about the experience.
Well, actually talking to Cass today, Odorizzi is not going to be going.
Okay.
So that's off the table.
There you go. Breaking news here on the podcast. One more thing I wanted to touch on with you as far as guys that have impressed at times this spring, and that's Jake Bowers, who is obviously a prospect for this club. A couple of home runs this spring. Is he a guy that there's a chance at some point this year are we going to see him up with the Rays and maybe being in a position to contribute?
You know what? I sure hope so, because you want to talk about things that are fun to watch. Watch this kid swing, and he's only 21. He hit a blast the other day, and he's very understated, but I'm telling you what, you don't see a prettier swing than this. And he came to the team in the trade that sent Will Myers to the Padres. So when Rays fans get a look at this guy, they might not be as disgruntled about the Will Myers trade, because this guy looks like he's the real deal.
It's one of those classic trades where you just kind of have to wait. I mean, obviously, it's been years since the Rays made that trade, and Jake Bowers was in the low levels at the time, but he's kind of made his way up. And like you said, still really young and could be a really good slugger in the majors. All right, that's going to do it for this MLB.com Extras, our Rays edition. For Bill Chastain, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Spring training rolls along for the Boston Red Sox down in Fort Myers. Ian Brown joining us on MLB.com Extras, our Red Sox edition. And Ian, away from the team in the snow in Boston as we record this during what we'll call the blizzard of 2017. No offense, but that's terrible timing by you.
Yeah, you know, I try to time my trip home for a few days to reintroduce myself to my family every year during spring training. For just a few days, usually get a little bit better weather than this. But what are you going to do? Reminds you of how lucky we are to be in spring training for most of February and March.
Yes, I stumbled through the snow to the subway this morning in New York. I'm sure Boston is actually worse from what I've seen on the weather. But we'll think warm thoughts. We'll think about baseball. And it's Tuesday, and we got the news that was by no means a surprise, but it looks like David Price will indeed start the season on the disabled list. Obviously, he's at the point now, Ian, where he's just kind of playing catch, I think, in his return from the elbow injury. So this isn't a surprise, but I guess good that the team is, at least in some ways, has a plan right now for David Price's eventual return.
Yeah. I don't think there's any reason to string this along anymore and to make it seem like he was going to start the season on the active roster. You know, there's just no way. You know, he hasn't pitched in a game yet. And, you know, opening day is on April 3rd. And, you know, they need to build him up. So he pitched 90 to 95 pitches. That's how they stretch out all their pitchers. So, you know, hopefully he gets in the game maybe in the next, I would say maybe in the next 10 days or so. And, you know, he's going to have to get in 5-6 starts in Florida or with an affiliate, you know, maybe one or two with an affiliate in April, you know, before he's ready to step into that Red Sox rotation. So the good news is that he's progressing. And I think right now it's just a matter of building his arm out up and getting him stretched out. And I think he seems to be over the injury, hopefully. I think everybody's holding their breath a little bit till they see him pitching a game.
Yeah, so far since the initial scare and negative thoughts that this guy's done for the year, it's certainly kind of been all positive news since then. We'll hope that that continues. Speaking of the starters, and now there's no longer, at least for a little bit, the competition for that fourth and fifth job is now done because it's the third, fourth, and fifth job, and you have three guys there in camp ready to go for that. So that's, I guess, one positive that comes of this is you don't have to make that decision on which of those starters heads to the bullpen or heads to the minors until a little bit later. Drew Pomerantz making his first start of the spring as we record this podcast. Is he on track to be ready to go? Because obviously this is a little bit of a later start for him as well.
Yeah, he is on track, but you know, everything has to go right. And this really kind of puts the more focus on Drew Pomerantz because he had some elbow problems of his own, you know, late last season and kind of affected his performance, affected his offseason. So, yeah, you are looking a little bit more at Drew Pomerantz to say, you know, is this guy ready to be one of our five starters? Is he ready to pitch effectively? Will he have the arm strength that he needs? So that's what we're going to find out here in these coming days.
Rick Porcello had a minor thumb injury as we continue to just get through the starters here at the beginning of the podcast. But five scoreless in an intra-squad game. Obviously, that's a little different than Grapefruit League action, but it seems like the thumb issue is no longer an issue.
Yeah, Porcello's fine. He's a tough guy anyway, but he kind of shook that right off, and he thought he was good to go. By the end of that game, I think it just affected him there on the next pitch where you know, one of the Mets guys, I can't remember now who it was, took him for a two-run homer there right after he took that line drive from Cespedes off the right off the thumb. But no, he's going to be fine. Just one of those minor scares at the time. Fortunately, nothing broke. Got all flesh and no bone, so he should be good to go.
Steven Wright, another starter, expected to be there at the beginning of the season, and he got out on Monday and looked pretty good in his first start. Obviously, a small sample size, Ian. 16 strikes, though, in 21 pitches, which for a knuckleballer in March, I guess you have to look at that as a good positive because control is always the question with a knuckleballer, and for him to have the feel for it this early has to be a good sign.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think Steven Wright was really antsy to get back on the mound. It's been a long time coming for him. You know, that stupid freak base running injury he had last year, diving back into second base. And for whatever reason, he took that ridiculously big secondary lead at Dodger Stadium. I'm sure he'd like to have that one back. But yeah, this guy, he was a great story. People forget he was one of the best stories of the first half last year. He made the All-Star team. Aside from Porcello, he was the most consistent best pitcher in the first half of the season. And it took him a long time to get to the major league in the first place. So I think he's really excited. And, you know, all systems appear to be going with Steven. So I think that, you know, I think a knuckleballer is easier to build back up anyway than a traditional pitcher. So I think he's going to be good to go.
All right, let's talk about some bats. And Rosny Castillo, kind of a lost name in this organization. Obviously, the big contract, and there was high hopes for him. It didn't really work out, and he ended up, you know, they put him through waivers. He ends up back in the minor leagues. A home run here in the spring. How has he looked at the plate in the field, and where does he kind of just stand in the organization right now?
Yeah, he looks pretty good. You know, the best, most of them are pretty good. He had an unfortunate incident at the very beginning of spring training when he lost track of the number of outs I think it was in the college game against Northeastern and didn't run out of ground ball. That was a bad look right there, but he's recovered from that. The problem within the organization is the Red Sox are spoken for in the outfield. You know, they have Benintendi, they have Jackie Bradley Jr., Mookie Betts, and, oh, by the way, Chris Young off the bench who could start for a lot of teams. So there just really isn't a spot for Ruzney right now. So you wonder what they do with him. Maybe they try to have him build a productive year in the minor leagues this year, and then Young's eligible for free agency at the end of this year. So, you know, maybe Ruzney would be ready to help them by next year. There's still a lot of time left on that contract, Tim. They signed that contract in 2014, so I think they still have 3 years left on that after this year even. So it's too early to write this guy off. Maybe he could build some trade value also. But I think at this point he just remains a minor league player. He's probably not going to make the team just because, like I said, there's no spot. And we'll see where he goes from here. But this is a big year for him development-wise, just to stay consistent, stay on the field, and kind of show that he can be better than he was last year.
Speaking of guys who probably don't have a spot necessarily when you look at this roster, but are intriguing stories in the spring, Carlos Quentin trying to make a comeback, 34 years old. Here's a guy who was obviously an all-star player at one point. Have you gotten a chance to talk to him at all this spring?
Not too much because he's been over at the minor league camp. But I know that he really hopes he can come back from – this guy's a pretty good player. Not that long ago. But again, it's hard to see the fit in Boston. These are all kind of injury depth insurance options. So, I think for Carlos Quentin's sake, you hope that he can show some things to some scouts down here and maybe at least open himself up an opportunity to go help another team so he's not kind of stuck in the minor leagues.
He was known as kind of one of those guys who was a professional hitter, could get the job done at the plate, never a great guy in the field. But it is neat to see guys like that giving it a go. And at this point, you would think kind of playing for the love of the game, right, to get back there and just play the game of baseball a little more.
Yeah, exactly. These guys want to play this game as long as they can. You know, there's a pretty short shelf life on a baseball career, so you might as well maximize that and keep playing until, I think a lot of guys will just keep playing until they basically literally rip the uniform off you.
You've seen some cuts, obviously, for the Red Sox here in spring training. Henry Owens optioned to minor league spring training. Brandon Workman optioned as well. I wanted to talk about both those guys, but starting with Workman, obviously this was a guy who was a huge part of the World Series run in 2013, kind of out of nowhere, really pitched well, and I think he even pitched a scoreless inning in that decisive Game 6 in Boston. And then he had the injury woes. He's back now, and he's looked pretty good this spring. Is he going to be a guy who can contribute at some point this season?
Yeah, I think so. They just need him to go out and pitch regularly down at AAA, sort of build back even some more arm strength coming off that surgery, and then he could be a pretty good option for them. You know, you always need guys in the bullpen throughout the course of the season. You know how it is with the attrition and unexpected downturn in performance from some guys. So you hope Brandon Workman can get back to that guy. It's been a while, but he can get back. You hope he can get back to that guy he was in 13, because people forget, 14 they had him starting, and that just didn't go well at all. He was originally a starter, but he tried to start in 2014 and just didn't prove to be a starter. And then 2015, the plan was to put him back in that bullpen, and that was when he developed the injury. So you really haven't had a chance to see if he can get back to that guy that he was in the bullpen before the injury and before they converted him back to the rotation.
So you see good signs from a guy like Brandon Workman. Henry Owens, it just so far hasn't worked out, and this spring, again, not really working out. What needs to happen with Henry Owens if he's going to make it to the major leagues? And maybe that's not even in Boston. But eventually, what does he need to get together? Because this guy at one point was a pretty highly thought of prospect.
Yeah, he just needs to command the baseball, strike one. He's just all over the place. Seems to be in his own head a little bit. So, I just don't see it happening for him in Boston right now. It's been a while that he's been trying to establish himself. He had a couple chances last year and squandered them, and didn't even have that great command at Pawtucket last year. And then he's come into the spring training and didn't have good command at all or good results. So, we'll see. I mean, he's going to get a chance at Pawtucket to still pitch every fifth day and maybe figure some things out. But like I think we said before, those lanky, lefty kind of guys, it can take some of them a while to sort of develop from a mechanical standpoint. I think he's going through some of that. So you hope that he can salvage something here. But, I just don't know if it's going to happen at this point.
Yeah, and you wonder if a change of scenery can always help a guy like that, too. Maybe that's the answer eventually at some point in his career. All right, Ian, great stuff. Good luck with the shoveling in Boston. Hopefully you can get back to the warm weather soon enough, and hopefully they can get the snow off the field at Fenway Park before opening day, because I know the Red Sox open the season at home. So we got a couple of weeks to go. Hopefully they can get it done. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Red Sox edition. For Ian Brown, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.